Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson, who offers us the latest on the Farm Bill status on Capitol Hill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Farmers are keeping a close eye on the future of a key input following a recent court decision. A federal appeals court ruled last week that the Environmental Protection Agency should not have revoked several tolerances that effectively took chlorpyrifos off the market for producers. Now, next steps from the EPA and the court are still being determined, but farm group leaders are optimistic the decision could restore producer access to the crop protection tool. A source tells our Steve Davies the picture of the product's availability should clarify by the end of the year. USDA announced more steps promoting competition in agriculture with a special focus on the meat and poultry sector. The department finalized a new rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act to help poultry growers understand the terms of their agreements with integrator companies. USDA also clarified that meat purchased through agricultural marketing service programs needs to be born, raised, and slaughtered within the U.S. And finally, Congress has 1 week remaining to avoid a government shutdown. A continuing resolution currently funding the government expires Friday the 17th, and lawmakers have yet to come up with an agreement on what comes next. Among the provisions up in the air is a possible extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. Committee leaders are pointing to broad agreement on the need to give Congress another year to produce a Farm Bill, but have yet to roll out the specifics on some of the extension's more complicated details. Pennsylvania Republican Glenn G.T. Thompson chairs the House Ag Committee and tells us the process is unfolding but needs more time.
Legally, we can't go forward without having the Congressional Budget Office estimates, and it wouldn't be smart not to get the technical assistance from USDA, because that there's a practical implication there of on what's possible with what's being proposed. And then the third thing that, we're making progress on is looking of how do we pay for this, which requires reprioritizing existing spending. There'll be no new dollars. That's kind of a reality in the economic situation we're in as a country and the 118th Congress.
So then obviously looking then for a little bit more time for you all to consider something, an extension is on the table. What needs to be resolved before that can be rolled out?
Well, Spencer, let me just say, an extension is always a part of the process. Now, I have refused to talk about an extension until recently on purpose, because I didn't want that to distract from us from doing our job of writing a highly effective farm bill, which we are doing and have done a significant amount of. But every farm bill requires, no matter what year it was, required an extension. Why is that? Well, because, you know, once you cross the line of December 31st, there are a lot of programs that there's, you know, where you have to have an extension. You have to have something in place to allow them to go forward. And it needs to be because of titles like the commodity title, which has, I don't want to oversimplify, but it's got a middle and a beginning, a middle and an end. You can't reauthorize that in just a couple months. You need to the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. But that doesn't mean we wait till September. I mean, my goal is that we will still, once USDA and CBO comes through with their obligations for us, you know, that we're able to get a farm bill moved as soon as possible.
So, I mean, maybe I'm getting a little philosophical here, but you mentioned some of the kind of mechanical delays in moving thing, you know, things like waiting back to hear back from CBO, USDA, what have you. But it seems from the chair that I'm sitting in that there's been some political delays as well in the Farm Bill process. And I wonder, do you think those are more symptoms of the current legislative climate in Congress generally, or is there more specifically some issues in generating agreement within agriculture committee members?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's been significant, those have not significantly at this point in any way impacted the timing of the farm bill. We did lose several weeks, right, where we had speaker elections that we were working on, and probably 5 weeks worth of floor time. That said, we used that time not on the floor to be working very aggressively in the Agriculture Committee. The politics as they are, and it's been some difficult political times. I mean, it's always complex. It's been more complex. It hasn't hindered our work with the Farm Bill.
We'll continue our Farm Bill conversation with Chairman Thompson right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Funding has been at the heart of the Farm Bill debate on Capitol Hill over the last year, but House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson says he's seeing progress on both sides of the aisle.
I think those discussions in terms of funding are you know, I would say they're optimistic because, you know, part of it was unfortunate that my kind of a laundry list of areas that we ought to look for funding was released publicly because it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't ready to be released. It was just top line names. And I get the emotional response once the media published that and talked about the Inflation Reduction Act, talked about the Thrifty Food Plan, talked about the Commodity Credit Corporation areas for potential funding. But it just did it by those titles. When I get to the people to the table, and I did that yesterday, the most recently, and we really talk about what there, it's kind of common sense. There's no real downside to it. In fact, there's a lot of upsides of looking for payments. Like the Thrifty Food Plan does not cut anybody's benefits. It potentially, by being very prescriptive, and I'll just stick with that one, where any future evaluation of the Thrifty Food Plan, you know, we would in a bipartisan way define how the executive branch does that versus some of the abuses we saw with the Biden administration. CBO has determined that we can find a $30 billion pay for, and that's where we should be, right? And so I would say where, there's some reporting about in reflection on some of the things that we're talking about, you really start to talk about the details of what's on the table. There's a lot that we can agree upon. We'll see whether we do it again.
At this point, then, what details have you agreed upon that have bipartisan consensus that can be used? I understand if you're still needing to find additional funding, but what funding have you all found at this point?
Well, at this point, the agreement has been that people coming to the table, I've been really pleased with that, Republicans and Democrats, to be able to have a good, candid, discerning conversation. And that's where the agreement has been at this point. It's been a positive conversation. People come into those meetings especially my Democratic colleagues, with a lot of apprehension when you start talking about IRA and Thrifty Food Plan. But when we really talk about, you know, what we have in mind, and there's no written proposals, there's no written plan out there. It really is about just getting people to the table so we can have some good, honest conversation of where we can find opportunities.
Senator Stabenow said a couple of weeks ago that she had been working with Majority Leader Schumer over there and identified potentially $4 to $5 billion of new money. You said earlier in this conversation you're maybe not expecting new money. I mean, have you had a chance to speak with some folks in the Senate about
that's not new money. That's reprioritized money. New money would be just increasing spending without any kind of a pay for. And so Senator Stabenow has taken the commitment to look to, you know, to identify different pots of money to reprioritize. I really appreciate, you know, the efforts that she has made with Senator Schumer as the majority leader in the Senate to, you know, to be able to explore some, you know, possibilities of reprioritizing spending in towards the Farm Bill.
Wrapping up here then, looking at the Ag Committee leadership in the House and Senate pursuing an extension toward end of September of 2024, if I were to give you your ideal timeline, I imagine you'd like to have a farm bill on the president's desk yesterday, but knowing that that's obviously not going to be the case, what is your ideal timeline then moving forward?
Well, obviously, the extension will need to be a long-term extension, just as the nature of certain programs like Title I, the commodity program. That doesn't mean that we do a farm bill in September, which is how some folks are interpreting that. Well, let me put it this way. Producers, processors, and consumers need to have reauthorized farm bill as soon as we can get it done. I would love to see that happen in January. You know me, I'm always looking to see the greatest Thanksgiving gift I could get or maybe Christmas would be CBO and the United States Department of Agriculture finish its job in getting the information that we need to have. That really are the barriers standing in the way of the House of Representatives Agriculture Committee.
Chairman Thompson, thanks for joining us.
That's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through agriculture's thoughts on a Biden administration initiative in this week's Map It Out.
American ag groups are hoping to see improvements in trade relationships across the Pacific Ocean through a Biden administration initiative. The U.S. and more than a dozen countries are part of the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity. The goal is to create a better economy for both American and Indo-Pacific families and businesses. This map shows the countries joining the United States in the agreement, including major trading partners like Australia, Japan, Indonesia, and South Korea. Producers and exporters of pork, dairy, beef, corn, and various fruits are dealing with some sort of limitation from one or more of the other countries. Bill Thompson has more on the agreement and the challenges faced by American producers in an article on our website, AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue our conversation about the upcoming farm bill and the politics facing it with a couple of panelists that know farm bills very, very well. Joined this week by Tom Sell with Combus Sell and Marshall Matz with OFW Law. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Tom, I want to go to you first because right now it seems as if a lot of the conversation is about whether or not an extension is going to take place, perhaps in a continuing resolution to avoid a government shutdown at the end of next week. I want to pivot instead to broader farm bill conversations. Let's say for the sake of argument that that extension effort is successful. There still needs to be a five-year farm bill at that point, and there seems to be kind of a lack of consensus about getting any kind of Democratic and Republican support on a bill. How does Chairman Thompson go about recruiting the Democratic support that he's likely going to need, given what we've seen out of the Republican conference the last couple of weeks? How does he go about getting Democratic support on a farm bill?
There's no specific how. I can't say exactly how. Every farm bill is different. Every pathway is different. I think they all recognize the need, and that's common across, you know, Chairwoman Stabenow in the Senate and her ranking member Bozeman. The four corners, the four pillars are all kind of resolute that a farm bill does need to be done, just as you said. Assuming that that extension, just as you said, I think there will be a way that this can come together either early in the next year or certainly by the first, second quarter timeframe.
Absent any kind of bipartisan agreement, we're seeing some real pushback from Democrats to some of the funding mechanisms that are being discussed right now. absent some kind of change in funding mechanism or change in Democratic thinking, is a GOP-only bill something that has legs in the House to potentially just get something to conference?
Yeah, I don't think that's the way Chairman Thompson wants to go. But when you look at it, that is how the last two farm bills have, in fact, gone. That is where I think, you know, GT kind of brings a unique perspective and a unique brand of leadership from the Republican side to perhaps achieve some good bipartisan reforms that could also free some, or provide some oil, or an easier way for the entire farm bill to come together. But that'll be a big challenge again. And look, at the end of the day, if it has to be a partisan farm bill coming out of the House, gets married to a more bipartisan bill coming out of the Senate, comes together in conference, that's the way the last two farm bills have worked. And that's, at the end of the day, that's not a bad result. So there are multiple paths that this could take.
Well, and of course, funding is the big issue. And Marshall, that's where I want to bring you into the fold here, because we saw some comments not too long ago from a Senate Ag Chair, Debbie Stabenow, saying that she had worked with Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, and they've got $4 to $5 billion in money to bring into the farm bill. If we accept, for the sake of argument, that premise, is a $4 to $5 billion infusion of capital going to satisfy the needs in your mind that that need to be addressed through this next farm bill, given the already tight budget situation and the requests that the committees are receiving?
I don't know. I agree with Tom that everyone's goal is a more bipartisan farm bill. I certainly grew up in the time when McGovern and Dole were working together, and the staff served both of them. That doesn't happen anymore. But they still need to come up with something that's going to work and pick up urban votes in the House. They won't get urban votes in the House if they try to cut SNAP too much or SNAP at all. Because the truth of the matter is, at $2 per person per meal, there's not any room. And we need to increase other parts of the ag budget significantly. I'd personally like to see ag research expanded quite a bit. If they do a one-year extension, and I think they will, if they can find a CR that is passable, they need a vehicle to pass that one-year extension. That puts us to October 1 of 24, which is just 1 month before the election. I have trouble imagining how they're going to do a farm bill with everybody running home to run for re-election. The challenge is significant. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to 2025.
We'll have more from this week's panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. The Farm and Food Coalition has long been a critical part of passing farm bills on Capitol Hill, but Marshall Matz with OFW Law says he's a little worried about that coalition headed into this process.
The ag community is the only community I know of that is the victim of its own success. We produce so much food with so few people that people are not sensitive to the needs of the agriculture community. It's actually just 1% of the population feeds us all, and we're only spending 8 to 10% of our disposable income on food. So the American consumer has a heck of a deal from agriculture. But we ignore it politically because of our success.
So if then that coalition is going to be tested during the drafting, development, lobbying for a new farm bill, what does that ultimately mean for final passage?
Well, I think it means that the nutrition community is critical to the passage of the next farm bill. You're not going to get a farm bill without support of urban members, without support of the anti-hunger community. And that doesn't happen without Jim McGovern's support and Mr. Scott's support, and Debbie Stabenow's too. So it remains, this is going to be a very, very tricky farm bill to draft. And it's unclear to me even what year they're going to be drafting it in.
So, Tom, I want to wrap up the conversation with you and get, you know, talk about a commodity provision that, of course, the increase in reference price is something that has been a key driving point for many farm groups. But through an extension, the escalator provision in the existing farm bill could actually end up increasing those reference prices for the 2024 crop year. I wonder, how do you think an increase in reference prices through that escalator provision would impact the politics of producing a five-year farm bill next year?
There's always going to be this nice, you know, beautiful marriage, you know, political marriage that moves the farm bill forward. But the real energy is always the producers. Reference prices are a big part of that, creating that safety net, because farmers are at the mercy of this kind of global marketplace, these commodity markets. And when those prices go down for reasons far beyond the control of any individual producer, that's why we have a safety net to try and booster and bolster their income during those down years so that they can get through those down years to the next high time. That is the essence of the safety net in the farm bill. The escalator that was put in the 18 farm bill is huge. It's going to really benefit corn, beans, wheat to an extent, not so much benefit there for cotton and rice. And so that kind of goes to some of this differentiation between the levels of safety net between the various commodities. And I think that's going to be part of the challenge. And really, it lays out for a good potential solution as we go into crafting this kind of Title I package that I think Chairwoman Stabenow and Chairman Bozeman, or Ranking Member Bozeman and Chairman Thompson and Ranking Member Scott, I think there's a landing zone there where they can find an agreement that supports all the farmers of all those various crops across this great nation.
Gentlemen, great conversation, great insights. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through some changes folks would like to see in a major rural development program in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's ReConnect program has deployed broadband in rural areas across the country. But there's a growing debate about its future speed requirements. This chart shows the number of ReConnect applications that were approved, rejected, and withdrawn for fiscal years 2019, 2020, 2022, and 2023. No funding rounds were rolled out in fiscal year 2021. USDA numbers show 305 applications were submitted in fiscal year 2022, the most of any of the 4 years. According to a USDA Rural Development spokesperson, the department has provided $2.3 billion for ReConnect projects in 35 states. To qualify for funding, projects must serve areas that will experience an increase in download and upload speeds. But some on Capitol Hill think the program needs to improve its current speed threshold to 100 megabytes per second. The current upload requirement is set at 20 megabytes per second. Noah Wicks has more information on the program and the debate over future speed needs on our website, agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House and Senate have until Friday to avoid a looming government shutdown. In the meantime, the Senate Ag Committee will get together Tuesday for a hearing on artificial intelligence in agriculture. And finally, next week is the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. We'll be shooting on location at that event and hope to see many of you there. We'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.